Welcome back, podcast fans. I'm your host, Annette Hines, and this is Parenting Impossible, the Special Needs Survival Podcast. I'm here to talk to you today about something extraordinary. It is Meg Zucker, who wrote an amazing book called Born Extraordinary. So if you haven't got a great summer read yet, this is the book you want to pick up. She is the author of Born Extraordinary, Empowering Children with Differences and Disabilities. And she's the founder and president of Don't Hide It, Flaunt It. It's a great program, a great company. And you can find out more about it just on her website at www.don'thideitflauntit.com. She talks a lot about, advancing tolerance and understanding and mutual respect for people's differences. Her story is just, I guess extraordinary, right? In really discussing what she learned from her family and growing up being different. She's a very high demand speaker and activist, and she's been featured on the Today Show and has done keynotes. Her writing has appeared in Parents Magazine, USA Today. She's published on Motherwell and Scary Mommy and Mighty. She was also the subject of a TLC special, My Extraordinary Family. Her book is important because it really resonates with not just a how-to guide, it's weaving parenting with compassion and empathy along with empowerment and focusing on not just, oh, this is so sad and it's so hard, but, how to bring a child through this world, not just into this world, through this world. And I really think that you will just, it's not just a great story and a great read, but you will just feel fantastic when you read this book, like I did. I have a life that feels like a roller coaster sometimes. And this last week has been so many ups and downs, and maybe the last couple of weeks. So at the end of May, I always have a little bit of a low with Elizabeth's birthday, and I usually will go to visit her and I bring cupcakes and I have a little birthday party. I don't know. Maybe that sounds weird to you. I regret that I made the choice to bury her. It was a hard thing. I was really numb at the time when Elizabeth passed, and I just kind of made decisions, wasn't really thinking. I wish I had been very thoughtful about these decisions. I didn't really have time to think in advance about what I wanted to do for her final remains. And I just regret it because I can't stand thinking about her down there. It really bothers me, even though I know she's not there anymore. And I know it's kind of a weird thing to talk about and a hard thing to talk about, but hey, this is my podcast and I get to talk about whatever I want. And that's great. That's a great thing about having a podcast. You get to talk about whatever you want. And if people don't want to listen to you, they don't have to. So, this year, and this is like, okay, birthday number 10 without her. I drove there 3 times. I could not go in. I just couldn't do it. And I feel so guilty about that. like, I'm supposed to do this. I have to do that. I gotta expect it, you know? But I just couldn't. I don't go regularly. I just can't make it there. It's not in me. So I have to find another way. And I'm thinking about doing something kind of dramatic, like digging her up and doing cremation. And I've seen that they do these stones now. And I'm thinking about that. And they do jewelry. And like they make diamonds out of somebody and they, you know, can do cremation jewelry and different things like that. I have to do something because I want her to be close to me, but I can't do the cemetery thing. It's been 10 years and I struggle with it so much. So the roller coaster, you know, things have been going amazing at the practice. I've been having some great new ideas about bringing our community together in some new and exciting ways. You'll be hearing more about that later as I'm developing some new ideas for bringing more information and support to all of you. Always thinking about things like that. And I think I'm going to do another summer book review read because I've read so many great books these last few months for the podcast and interviewing people. And I want to get a list together for all of you. If you haven't listened to all the episodes, you might not have caught everything. So, but I want to just mention again. So this interview with Meg Zucker was amazing. She is just a dynamic speaker and such a lovely person and just very inspiring and uplifting, and not for the stupid, silly way that many people think, but just because, you know, she's leading an empowerment movement, which is great. So I hope that you get a lot out of this episode. And as always, please rate and review this podcast. It's how we get our information out to people who need it. And if you have any questions, if you have some ideas for a topic, please reach out to us. We would love to hear from you. Thank you. Thank you. All right. And here we go. Here's Meg. Here today with author Meg Zucker, and her book is Born Extraordinary. So excited to present Meg to you today. Thanks for coming, Meg.
Oh, thank you. I'm just so happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
So before we started recording today, I was telling Meg that I have been having a little bit of a crazy couple of weeks because of my dog, which I know I've been talking to everybody about. But I loved this book from the very beginning. And it started about 10 pages in when she was talking about her fiance, John. John wanted her to see a specialist and she went to see a psychic. And I was just hooked from there. That was such a funny story. So it was such a great lead in. And it kind of, you know, set the scene for the contrast in this whole, you know, disability world and kind of what lives can be like a little bit. So I'm really excited. Welcome to the show. And, you know, can you please just introduce yourself a little bit, Meg? Talk about your introduction into the disability world. What brings you into this disability world? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I was born with a genetic condition called ectrodactyly, which literally just means missing digits. I was born with one finger on each hand, shortened forearms, and one toe on each foot. And it's a condition, the psychic got it wrong because the condition did get passed to two of our three children. So, you know, at the end of the day, in terms of my own experience, although no one in my own family was born with my genetic condition, not my parents, not my brothers, certainly no relatives or anything, you know, there was no one else like me, but it didn't end with me because I gave birth to my difference literally. And quite frankly, I was raised by parents who truly empowered me, truly let me sort of follow my passions and help me, just all the concepts that I cover in the book in terms of raising my dignity and really let, you know, I have this chapter called Let Go and Let Live. And so, you know, my story is written, but it's not only my story, it's 30 other contributing parents of kids with differences and disabilities. But it's written because I wish my parents would have written a guidebook, you know, in terms of what they did. Quite frankly, I think what they did was not only great, I can't say I followed their lead all the time. Sometimes I did not. And sometimes I made some missteps with our own kids. And so I felt like people needed to hear about that too.
I thought that you touched on all of the important touchstones in the book. Obviously, you can't hit everything. Raising an extraordinary child, and I like that word, instead of special or disabled, or, you know, there's so many, language is important and labeling totally is awful, right? But language is important. And so I love your choice of book title here. And, you know, as you started out on this journey and you picked the categories and you did them by chapter, what struck you as the most important things to talk about? You know, why did you choose the, you know, 8 things to talk about that you did?
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's interesting because you were talking about labels, and I actually call out in the beginning, you know, the sort of concept, why am I using the word different versus disability? And, you know, at the end of the day, I felt like it needed to be called out because I wanted us to move past the label. One of the things that I've been saying in some interviews, which I'll say here too, is, you know, you could have 3 families with a child with the exact same genetic condition. One says, this is my son who's disabled. The next one is, this is my daughter who is differently abled. And this is my, and the third family says, this is my son who's different, same condition. And it reminds us that we should all be giving ourselves the sort of grace and respect that families deserve to decide what's right for them in terms of the label, whatever it is. And by the way, sometimes people evolve. Sometimes people start with one label and then they're like, no, I think I actually associate with this more. And that's okay too. So, so I really did want to cover that. In terms of the other thematic areas, you know, it's interesting. Originally, I was like, let me write a memoir. But there was, because I run a nonprofit, I had so many in the past 10 years experiences with other families. And I think based on all the writings that I have, you know, we have received in Don't Hide It, Flaunt It, my nonprofit, it's interesting. I think themes started bubbling up. So, you know, the first was literally the first chapter, which is embracing the new normal, and whether it happens at birth or along the way. You know, I think a lot of parents jump in, whether they're shocked, probably so, certainly was a surprise if nothing else, but they really want to fix things, or they want to be there for their kids, or they want to champion this and that, or whatever they fill in the blank they need to do. And it's all about the kid. And so that first chapter is really a check-in. It's a really almost like a personal check-in, like, who are you in this moment? You know, be honest with yourself. And are you consumed with the judgment of others? Because especially if you have a child that has a physical difference, you know, people are going to be staring. And even if it's invisible, that makes it even harder, because at first they won't be staring, but then they're going to be wondering, you know, based on behavioral, you know, elements of the child, depending on what the, you know, the condition is. And so, you know, that first chapter was so important for me to really help parents understand and navigate through that, based on my own personal experience and some stories from other parents as well. In terms of the other items, certainly the dignity focus, you know, and the first chapter I was just talking about, it's like, how can we possibly expect our children to feel dignified and want to get them there if we haven't reached it? But still, once we're ready, our children deserve, you know, the work that we need to do to give them the emotional strength through through the experience of living your life different or disabled or, you know, fill in the blank label. And, you know, some of the other chapters, one of them is the helping hand. That is, you know, you spent all this time building up your child's dignity and letting them sort of let go and let live and not overprotecting and so forth based on fears. And then the world comes in for the save. And so your child is subject to this constant. And since you read the book, you completely understand, you know, Mighty Mouse appears in the form of family, friends, strangers, you know, you name it.
The government, and, the system, the
everybody, everybody is inserting themselves. And, you know, it's really giving parents a window. I wanted to cover that topic just because as a person who has a genetic condition, which I passed on, so I've seen it as a parent and experienced it, I should say, as a parent and seen it with my kids. And it can be extremely difficult to navigate, you know. And in fact, I was speaking in New York City this past weekend, and a parent of a child who's blind said to me, you know, even in the education system, to your point, you know, they were misinterpreting her as being mean or like, you know, angry. And the reality is, she's like, because of that chapter, it even helped me to get like, she's frustrated. She's
and
frustrated
by her independence.
Exactly. And people, you know, but then I go deeper and I talk about how, you know, we do have a societal role to play that, you know, if we in fact, you know, bite off someone's head, I liken myself to a praying mantis in that chapter. But I had to learn and learn from it and evolve from it because, you know, if that same person, if I bite off their head because I'm, you know, feeling resentful that they've overextended themselves. Well, next person they see, they might not ever offer help. And I've actually thwarted kindness. So that thematically was so important. And then the other chapters, you know, just keeping it at a high level, you know, the what about the families, the entire dynamic of the family. I felt I had never read anything that was really just devoted and dedicated to sort of how that works or, you know, in terms of, and it's not just siblings, it's the equivalent, you know, maybe family, friends, kids of the same age or cousins, but all of that dynamic, I think, was deserving of its own chapter because I saw it in my own family in terms of growing up as well as with our daughter and our two boys. And then certainly Ethan, our oldest, was bullied when he was little for being physically, you know, different. And so as a result of that, I really wanted to focus on that subject. So thematically, it felt right. But it wasn't just going to be about bullying. It was really about, you know, most parents who have kids that are different or disabled. I mean, we're actually not, although we don't want our child to be bullied, we're actually more consumed with, will someone just be their friend, you know, because that's what they deserve. And so that chapter also, I really wanted to get that sort of understood.
That so resonates with me. So yeah, I want to just dig in a little bit deeper into some of these themes, if that's okay. And I want to start right at the beginning, because before you even get to chapter one, you have like sort of in the intro, this little keep it in perspective section. And you start right from jump, right at the beginning. And you tell a story of your friend Liz and her son Landon from when they were born. And it totally, you know, struck me because I had that same experience in the NICU. And, you know, you don't get to take your baby home, and my baby didn't cry. And so many people I know have that same experience too. And you don't know what to say to people when they ask you questions and you didn't have that joyful birth experience, you know. And from day one, your parenting experience, your mommy experience starts with shame, starts with, you know, that feeling less than, and it just kind of carries forward from there, right? And so I love that you brought that in right at the beginning of the book and sort of, let's just rip the Band-Aid off, people. We're just going to rip that Band-Aid off.
That's, you know, a good way of putting it. I did rip that Band-Aid off. I felt like we need to be super honest, being sensitive, but honest with people. Also, you know, also to know that there's a light at the end of the tunnel, which I also write, because they need to know that. There's also the element that, and you're sort of inferring it, but it throughout the book, but certainly in the beginning too, I do a lot of forecasting of people's behaviors and reactions to us. And I do that for two reasons. One, to give insight to parents who've had a child who becomes, born different, becomes different and so forth. And like how people are going to like insert foot into mouth kind of scenarios and be prepared for them, you know, which is often. But I also, you know, one of the things that I love so much was and appreciated the Library Journal when it gave a starred review. Its verdict was this is an essential read for all parents. And that meant so much to me. The primary community, of course, is parents of kids with differences and disabilities. It says it in the name of the book, you know, Born Extraordinary, Empowering Children with Differences and Disabilities. But, you know, those same people that are reacting to us, I want them to read it. And I want them to think about it as they are a person that's interacting with other parents, that they, you know, they mean the best of intentions. Typically, it's just sort of like, well, what is it? How is this being perceived on the other side? And I, at first, when I was writing, I'm like, uh-oh, I'm categorizing people. Maybe this is unfair, but you know what? At the end of the day, I've lived a life of this as well as parented it now. So I've had a lot of experience through it. And these things are real. And again, through my Don't Hide It, Flaunt It nonprofit, other parents, including Liz, you know, the person that you know, she was on the board for years. She's an advisory member now. I've really appreciated that maybe our children's conditions are different, but there's a lot of commonality in our experiences.
And as you were talking about foreshadowing, right in the next chapter, which is the first chapter, Embracing the New Normal, you start talking about how to deal with different communicators as people start to say those horrible, weird things to you. Oh my God. I started to have PTSD flashbacks of of the crazy, crazy things that people said to me as my daughter was growing up. The stuff that comes out of people's mouths, you know?
Yes. And, yes, absolutely.
And I can't tell you how glad I am that you actually put this in a book, because, you know, we're polite and we don't like to talk about the faux pas that people make, right? But we have to prepare parents for the stuff that people are going to say to you, you know, because they're going to say dumb crap to you.
Yeah. And to your point, and what I needed to do is be vulnerable too. So I needed to point out the things people are going to say with the best of intentions, typically, but I also needed to own up to my own mistakes. And that I do throughout the book too, because, you know, no one is perfect. Actually, maybe you remember this from the beginning of the book. One of my favorite things that I do is I quote one of my favorite movies, Moonstruck, when Cher's character says to Nicolas Cage's character, you know, well, first she says, snap out of it, which is not the way to fix things. But what she did say is, you know, the stars are perfect. Snowflakes are perfect. Maybe not in that order, actually. Not us, not us. And the minute, you know, those are the kind of things where I needed, you know, as I made mistakes and I needed to let go of the notion of perfection and actually arrive at the fact that once I let go of the notion of perfection, I have to tell you, I almost arrive back at the notion of perfection. Like, oh, okay. If our charge is to be madly in love with the life we've been given and the children that we've been blessed to have, then that's our perfect. And that's okay too. Yeah. So in that sense, maybe I've even moved past Cher's view. What else is perfect?
Well, yeah. I mean, our job is to teach our children how to be happy. And
yeah,
we can't do that by telling them what it means to be happy. We have to show them by being happy people.
Yeah. And also to be willing. And I take the happiness factor sort of to the next level, which is, and then give them grace on the days that they're not so happy. And that's okay too, because we're not so happy every single day either. And, you know, I think in the book, there's a point where I talk about a dignity ladder. And so I have these tips and tools, and I encourage people to come up with your own for sure. But, you know, the dignity ladder is really important because it really is helping children understand and appreciate, you know, that like any of us, you know, we could have someone encounter us doing XYZ. Let's say it's like annoying as anything. On the first day, we got off the wrong side of the bed. We're at the bottom of our dignity ladder and we're just crushed by it and upset mm-hmm. and angry and all that. And then the other day we get up and we're like feeling kind of peppy and someone's annoying or whatever, but we're like, well, that person's annoying, and we move on. And we have to almost be cognizant of that, because if we have to tap into our own, how do we feel inside? Because our reaction or reactive behavior really matters, and it can have sort of a butterfly effect or a downstream effect. So, you know, having kids and helping kids to sort of tap into like, how do you feel when that person's doing that? Like, and did you feel kind of sad inside already because the day was kind of a stinky day? Well, take a step back, because, you know, as my brother Peter, you know, you're sort of, you're in charge of your own happiness. Like, you really are.
Mm-hmm. So as you have been raising your own extraordinary children, all of them, whether they have differences or not.
Oh, they all do. They all do. Our daughter has ADHD, like executive functioning, you know, disability challenges in that sense. So, you know, that's the irony of our family. People take one look at me and our sons and think, oh my gosh, it must be so hard for them. And I would tell you, you know, her experience and our experience parenting someone who's challenged in that space. Yeah, that's pretty challenging.
I actually wanted to chat with you about that too. And I was going to roll into that. Can we put a pin in that for 1 minute? Because I want to ask you one more thing about one of your chapters, and then I do want to roll into the difference between visible and hidden disabilities or differences, mm-hmm. because, you know, it really, as I was reading through the book, you know, it became so, I was very thoughtful about it and very cognizant of the different challenges as someone, you know, an attorney who works with people with all kinds of disabilities. There's a lot of differences out there in how you really kind of bounce through the community and bounce through life if you are someone with, you know, learning differences or mental illness or mental health challenges versus someone with a limb difference or someone in a wheelchair like my daughter was, or someone who was blind, things that are very obvious. You know, the world does respond differently. And there are some things that are universal throughout, you know, the string that gets pulled throughout the disability community. But there are some things that are very different. So, you know, I absolutely want to have a chat and compare and talk about your book in that sense.
Yeah, I'm glad. It's an interesting, no one has raised this point, and it's important. Unless you were going to ask me something specific, I can otherwise just share my thoughts.
Yeah, are you going to share? Ask me something specific. Let's talk about this now. Okay. Yes, share your thoughts.
So it's really interesting. You know, when you're living your life, and I can always kind of equate, you know, sort of the invisible differences, not only in parenting our daughter, you know, who's got ADHD, who's adopted, you know, allergic to nuts, you know, which by the way is the hardest difference of our lives. I mean, she's been in the hospital multiple times because of it. But just to stick first with the visible differences, you know, when someone is visibly different, what happens is people's expectations, besides the pity and all that kind of stuff, just remove that from the conversation. They're lowered. And so you're living your life almost like trying either purposely or not, or whatever, that you can move the needle and they are like, oh, look what she can do, you know? And so there's always this sort of surprise element or this like, oh, you know, building up my expectations were really low, but now I can see what she can accomplish. So, maybe I was a little wrong about that. Now, let's take invisible difference, right? If someone has an invisible difference, let's say they have autism or they have any other type of thing that someone can't see, everyone's expectations are high in the sense that they're high for anyone else, just normal. And then as that person behaves or, you know, is in a different sort of realm of their own life, you know, and living in their own version of normal, people's expectations go down and start to react like, wait, what, why are you behaving or your child behaving in a certain way? I'm not getting it. I'm sort of, and so there's this really interesting element to that, in my opinion. And it's really one of those things. So the parent of the child that's invisible, it's, I have started to say, I liken it because my feet are covered in my shoes. So I know it's a really weird thing where I have to like, every summer I have to take my shoes off when I'm going to the beach or the pool, and I hate it. It's really hard and it's silly, right? Because here I am walking around with physically different hands and it's not like someone's going to be, but it's hard. And I wear otherwise my difference on my sleeve. And so, you know, the parent with the child that has the invisible difference, it's almost like navigating all of that is so, you know, critically important and understanding about, we were talking about people's encounters and reactions, you know, their reactions start one way and then start to, you know, change or can change depending on things. And so your role is to sort of level set, like, hey, stop reacting or expecting anything. Just embrace my child for who they are. And that's it. Like, get rid of all the expectations, like up or down.
And that's the thing. Yeah,
I think my best friend from college, Leah, she and I, like, I remember at some point we were like, oh my gosh, if we just, this has nothing to do with disabilities or anything, but we're just like, if we just stop expecting things from people, we're going to be so much happier. And the answer was we were, that's what we did. And I think in this space, the discussion is same, like, you know, people just need to let go of the expectations and on the parent side, as well as that, you know, and let things happen and evolve in such a natural way instead of a preconceived way.
Just have everything level set and just meet people where they are. Right.
Exactly. Meet people everybody. Where they are. And yes.
And then let everybody surprise us.
Yeah. And I, in the book, I quote, I think Prime Minister Harold Wilson says to Queen Elizabeth II, you know, you can't be everything to everyone else and still be true to yourself. And, you know, to me, that was like, when I saw that quote, I'm like, oh, I mean, when I was writing this book, quite frankly, Annette, I mean, that these incredible thought leaders and people that said things that deserved, you know, you're asking me what goes in the book, you know, or what themes, or like, there's a lot of people that have said some really important things, maybe in different contexts, but I wanted to put their thoughts in this context, as well as my own thoughts, to just give them their own platform of power.
I love that. I love it. That's great. So I wanted to ask you about your chapter called Letting Go. Could you just dig in?
Go. You mean let go and let live?
Let go and let live. I'm sorry. Could you just dig in a little bit? Tell us a little bit about that chapter, you know, about what went into it and who did you write that for? And tell the audience a little bit about it.
Well, I started the chapter out talking about, which is a real story for sure. When I was a little baby, my mom takes me to the pediatrician and apparently in 1 second, although after she read the book, she's like, you know, I didn't let go as the doctor. I'm like, oh, sorry, mom, if I messed that one up. So here on this podcast, I'll say maybe it was the doctor, maybe it was my mom. But the point is someone let go and I fell head first, you know, down towards the ground. And fortunately, the skinny waste basket that was filled with packaging material caught me. And so I otherwise would have not made that fall or survived the fall, but I did. And the doctor in that instant said, you know, that Maggie, we're just going to let, you know, let go and, you know, just watch her thrive or whatever he said. I forgot how I wrote it, but however he wrote is what he said, because my mom told me. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote this book because I said, every misstep that I've actually made when it came to my own children was because it was rooted in fear, you know, true fear, fear of, you know, embarrassment on their part if they couldn't physically do something. So I would proactively open water bottles just so that they wouldn't, you know, have to be at lunch and ask someone to do it. The problem was my fear was interfering with their own ability to independently thrive to the best of their abilities. And I felt like I needed to write about that. I felt like I know that because my parents allowed me to follow my passions, like they intuitively just did not have the same type of parenting fears that most people do. It's funny. I was at a book tour stop in DC at Politics and Prose. And I was like, which is incredible. And then I looked at them in the face because they live in DC now. I'm like, or it was just pure negligence, whatever you want to call it. But they have this ability to really say, oh, she wants to go bike riding with her brother, you know, and let me do it and let me do the things that were unfathomable. And not that I could actually do everything, but the point is I got the chance to try. And by letting me try it, it created a creative spark gene in me, if you will. I don't know if it's a gene, but it sort of whet my appetite in terms of my desire. Like, okay, well, maybe I couldn't do that, but I'm going to try this. And so, you know, in that chapter, it was like demonstrating, even with my own sons, you know, my son, Charlie, who wanted to play baseball. And I was like, how could he possibly wear a glove? And he writes for my website, if the glove fits, you know, and it was like, he was so adamant about playing. And, you know, I felt like that chapter was so, so important for parents to just, you know, we all want to protect our children, but we need to be careful in the space, not overprotecting them, so that they're not given the opportunity to really explore life to their own, you know, fullest extent of what their life is. And that's their joy. Yeah. You know, a lot of times what we think is, oh, look, they can't do this, or I'm afraid if they do this, but we're actually robbing them of joy if we're not careful.
I really, really resonate with that. You know, what this made me think of in my life was the last year of my daughter's life. She was 17 and they were having prom at Perkins School for the Blind. And she was really sick, even more so than she had always been. She had a lot of medical issues in addition to all of her disabilities. And I didn't want her to go. And her nurse, she had a full-time, like 24-hour nursing staff and her teacher. They were, even my husband, like they were all like begging me to let her go to prom. And her teacher even said that she would come, and because parents were not allowed to go, right? So her teacher would come on her own time and drive the van with the nurse, because the nurse was not allowed to drive her, and drive the van with the nurse and her back to school to the prom and take her so that she could go. That's how much they wanted her to be able to experience this. And I was just like in agony thinking like, what could go wrong? This is, you know, just, it was just like so hard for me. I finally relented and let her go. And, you know, she died less than 6 months later and she had a wonderful time. And it wasn't easy because she had to go with so much like medical equipment and everything. She wouldn't have had that experience if they had not like talked me into it, you know?
Annette, I wish I knew you so you could have contributed in the book with that story, because that's the perfect story of let go and let live. And, you know, again, to your point, had you not, you would have robbed her of that joy, right? Any parent, and we have to think of it that way. You know, our fear can really create that type, I'm not saying physical harm, but, you know, sort of the missed opportunities. And it's ironic, right? All we want is for our children to feel joy. And here we are actually, you know, and it's sort of like things that are out of our control are out of our control, and they can't experience all the same joys necessarily in the same way. But here's the subject where we actually can thwart their joy, and it's our fault. It's no one else's. It's not they.
Well, I was, you know, and I wish that I was not terrified and didn't have to be, you know, talked into it by like five different people. I wish that I had been braver than that and that it was my idea, but I'm honest to say that it was terrifying and I almost didn't let her go. But I'm really glad that they just browbeat me into it because I wasn't going to let her go.
Me too.
And she had a date too. She had two different gentlemen who asked her and who were there with her. Thank God. And I have the pictures and, you know, so at least, you know, she had that experience, but so did we, you know, we have all those pictures and everything now too. So it wasn't just her that experienced that because now we have those memories too. And it's wonderful that you are telling other people to, you know, of the experiences that their children can have and that, yes, it's scary and it's okay to be scared. It's not wrong. It's just that you can move beyond that.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, I mean, I'm so grateful for you to share. These stories matter so much to me. You know, back in the day, originally I wanted to be a teacher, but then I couldn't fathom. I was a very different person. I was hiding my hands and couldn't fathom being a teacher and being in front of a classroom of kids that kept staring and asking me questions. And, you know, then I evolved and I'm like, oh, I want to be a journalist because I love people's stories. And so, you know, but I wasn't a journalist because where I went to college in Wisconsin, and now I'm aging myself, we had to run to building to building, and I didn't get to the journalism building in time. So all the classes were filled. So I became a history teacher. But I know I'm digressing, but it's never left me that. And that's why for Don't Hide It, Flaunt It, we actually publish people's stories of all ages in terms of their own experience with difference or disability or you name it, you know, just mm-hmm. a visible or invisible difference. Because what you just described, you know, it's sort of, you know, as my literary agent says, it's showing, not telling. It's really sharing in a way that will impact people. I'm so glad you mentioned it on this discussion, during this discussion.
You know, like, so many people who read this book, they are going to have their own stories that are going to resonate. And, you know, they're going to feel so much as they're going through the stories. And it's great. And I hope that you have another book coming. I hope there's another one after this.
Thank you.
So, and the format is wonderful. It really is.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Yeah. Well, I'm thinking of it.
Good. As we are winding up, because we're just about out of time, I cannot leave without asking you about your nonprofit, Don't Hide It, Flaunt It. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. So actually, if you just go to megzucker.com, which is my author website, there's a whole, you can click to that. I think that's either easier and not as much of a handful of www.donthideitflauntit.com, but that can get you. Yeah. So I created that out of that bullying experience with Ethan, our oldest son, where I piloted a program, came up with a theme for kids, the things that make me different, make me me. And I intended to empower kids that look or feel different. And for the rest, they were like, I'm not different. There's nothing wrong with me. You know, that kind of thing. I'm like, wait a minute. There's always something about us, ourselves, our families that we wouldn't want someone to judge or make assumptions about. And so I created this program called Kids Flaunt through that, where kids would write essays or do art. And it became a national program in partnership with Scholastic. So that was 10 years ago. And it's evolved. I mean, middle school, high schools, we have collaborations with universities. We do Boys and Girls Club programming. We Fortune 500 in diversity inclusion workshops with, you know, leadership. We law firms, you know, I speak doing DEI speaking in that sense too. So Don't Hide It, Flaunt It, you know, is really the mission I'm so grateful for. I'm also grateful that it's much bigger than me and my story. It evolved to something that doesn't unite people despite differences, but even because of them.
Oh, that's fun. That's great.
Thank you for asking.
I'm so, so excited for the success of your book. Born Extraordinary. Meg, you are a gem. So happy to meet you.
You know, Meg spelled backwards is Meg spelled backwards is gem. So I like to remind people of that.
See how I did that?
I love that. Thank you for
picking up. It was really great. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Very excited about this book. Thank you for sending me a copy so I get to read it. And I cannot wait to go and give you a great review. So thank you so much for coming on the show. It was really awesome.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. Have a great day.
You too.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I just wanted to take a second to say how much I appreciate you taking the time to listen to these podcasts. I'm having a blast doing them, and I hope that you're finding the content to be what you were really hoping. If you are, please take a second to leave a rating and a review. It's so helpful in getting this content out to people who really need to hear it. Thank you so much.